Greetings, everyone, and welcome to Sci-Fi Dig. This week, I'm going to discuss the movie Pacific Rim. This movie came out in, I believe, 2013, and it was hyped. There was a lot of hype behind it, but I'm not exactly sure what happened with this film. It came out, and I distinctly recall that I really wanted to see it, that it looked like it was something that was going to be a lot of fun. I didn't spend a lot of time delving into the background and trying to find, you know, hundreds of trailers and things like that. I just saw a few trailers, but I was very much intrigued by the subject matter, because we were dealing with kaijus and, you know, giant robots, and I'm like, I need to see this movie. And I remember that I went on a Saturday, and I went by myself because nobody else was around. Everybody was off doing something. And so I went in the morning, and like, I was able to go see the film and, you know, make it to work on time. And I was pretty pumped when I saw it, that I cannot believe, like, I love this movie. I thought it was fantastic. So I can tell you right now, going into this review and this discussion of this film, that I love it. I think this is a great movie. I think that it is the people that are just like, they don't get it. They don't understand it. They don't. They're looking for some sort of deep philosophical meaning behind a film. This is just a fun film. This is a film of just being able to go and have a good time. And you have giant monsters, and there's fights, and it has melodrama that, you know, you can kind of see coming. This is. And again, at the same point in time, it's not exactly like kind of check your brain at the door and, you know, go, you know, do have this thing run in the background while you do something else. You need to kind of pay attention to it. You know, there are some films where you can just kind of like check out a little bit, you know, when you're watching. That doesn't make them any more enjoyable. But in this particular case, this film is something that you need to kind of pay attention. It's a little on the long side, a little more than 2 hours. Honestly, when I saw it in a theater, it was like it flew by. When I've seen this film probably 5 or 6 times now. I watched it again for the podcast, and then I sat down to pull the audio files and skim through a lot of it, because I knew I kind of had an idea of what I wanted to pull. But I love it. I think it's a great time. And, you know that going in. So if you're overly critical of this film, you're probably not going to like my review. So you can just, you know, skip this show. I'm going to talk a little bit about the background. I'm going to talk a little bit about the, you know, we're going to get a sequel finally. But they're just, you got giant monsters and you got giant robots fighting the monsters. I'm not exactly sure what's not to love about the movie, but that's just me. Now, you know, when the movie, like I said, you know, one of the things about the film was that here in the States, it did not do great. That's why everybody was like, well, you know, there's not going to be any kind of sequel. I do believe that in the beginning, when they started talking to Del Toro about this film, that he was talking about doing a trilogy. And once the cost of the film, the budget was $190 million. The domestic gross was only just over $100 million. And kind of right away, you know, that whole idea of doing anything, doing any kind of sequel wasn't going to happen, because it was just so prohibitively expensive for the amount of money. Then what happened, because, you know, it's a kaiju film, it was released worldwide, and the foreign gross, just the foreign alone, was over $300 million. So, you know, that's the whole thing, is you're looking at the total gross is $411 million. So that's, you know, more than double what it cost. And, you know, there's definitely, that's when the sequel stuff really started to fire up again. So it looks as though we're going to get a sequel, but that has been a starter and stopper a half a dozen times. So I'm not even going to talk. I mean, if we get a sequel, that's great. I can't wait to see more of this type of stuff. But at the same point in time, if we don't, it's kind of one of those things like, you know, you see all these things in pre-production where all this stuff is announced at Comic-Con, and then it's 10 years later before we see anything of it because, you know, the ideas start that they start so early trying to get some hype around projects that they're doing. And hopefully, I guess that the idea is that when you get enough hype going, that people will, it will just kind of take on a new cycle of its own, and the powers that be that are in control of yes or knowing a project will be like, man, there's all this buzz around us, you know, we need to do this, and you know, yada yada. But what happens is that, you know, you get 100 projects announced at these big events, these big conventions, and you're lucky if, you know, 5 of them actually come to fruition. So with Pacific Rim, there has been a lot of starts and stops. So I don't even like to talk about a sequel because I really want one. And at the same point in time, it's been a non-starter like a half dozen times that I just kind of just hope for the best. Now, you know, Del Toro film. So I think it's kind of funny that, you know, we have Ron Perlman in this as an actor, although I have next to no audio clips of him because we're going to head on. We have to set up the world first. And with this film, you know, what you need to understand is that we jump right in the beginning of the film. It shows us what happened. There is a rift and it's in the ocean, and is basically the idea here is that it is an opening into another world. And so rather than us being invaded by aliens, you know, from the stars, it is coming through this time. Well, I call it a time rift, but it's not really a time rift, just a rift. And they start sending these kaijus, these giant monsters out, and they are attacking. And the first one attacks, and of course we go after it with, you know, tanks and rockets and you know, everything. After much destruction, we're able to take it out. Well, what happens is we think that's just a one-off. Well, it's not. And more destruction happens. So the first clip is explaining kind of what happened here. This first clip, for some reason, I have no idea why, it's kind of hot. So I'm going to turn it down a little bit because there's a little bit of distortion. I'm not sure why that happened. I never had that happen before, but I didn't realize it until after I had ripped all of the clips, and then I went back, and this one was did not sound very good.
None. Only 6 months later, the second attack hit Manila.
The acid factor of the kaiju blood creates a toxic phenomenon named kaiju blue.
And then the third one hit Cabo. And then the fourth. And then we learned this was not going to stop. This was just the beginning. We needed a new weapon. The world came together, pooling its resources and throwing aside old rivalries for the sake of the greater good. To fight monsters, we created monsters of our own. The Jaeger program was born. There were setbacks at first. The neural load to interface with the Jaeger proved too much for a single pilot. A two-pilot system was implemented. Left hemisphere, right hemisphere, pilot control. We started winning. Jaegers stopping kaijus everywhere. But the Jaegers were only as good as their pilots. So Jaeger pilots turned into rock stars. Danger turned into propaganda. Kaijus into toys. We got really good at it. Winning. Then it all changed.
So what changed? Well, what happens in our film here is that our main character who we're following throughout the film, played by Charlie Hunnam, who most people know from Sons of Anarchy, he plays Raleigh Beckett, and him and his brother Yancey Beckett are in charge of Gypsy Danger. And so left and right hemisphere, and they go and it's, you know, I love this scene, and it doesn't really hit me. It didn't really hit me till like the second or third time that I watched the film when he's talking about how the Jaeger pilots were like rock stars, right? And it is, there's a kaiju attack, and these guys are, they wake up. It's like, hey, you know, come on, we got to go. You know, they call them out, and Raleigh has just got this giant smile on his face. Like, he is living the dream. I mean, these are young guys who, you know, don't, they might not be the smartest guys in the world, but they are living a dream. They're going, first of all, they're operating a giant robot. So like, that's pretty freaking badass. Right. But they are just, they're rock stars. I mean, that's the thing is, you know, they are just treated like royalty, and they're loving this. So, they go after this thing, and ultimately what happens is that the kaiju is much, they give them all levels, and the kaiju is much stronger than they anticipate. And Gypsy Danger, which, the Jaeger itself is just taken apart. You know, it is the parts of its arms ripped off, and we have this crazy weird scene that, to me, it never really, the time never really worked on this scene, because it seems as though we jump around, then we jump back to Gypsy Danger showing up on a beach, and a guy and a boy are walking on the beach, and when I say beach, it's a frozen beach, and the Gypsy Danger collapses on the beach, and Charlie Hunnam's character is still alive, but his brother is gone. He's dead. The big thing here, and the next clip is going to demonstrate this before their battle, is we talk a little bit about the drift. They try to use some visual components here to show what this is like. Basically, you have two pilots, and they each control, right and left hemisphere and all that stuff, because a single pilot wasn't enough. And the pilot program, they went through a lot of trial and error before they figured this out. So they have to go into what they call the drift together. This is one of the components of the movie. I'm going to get more into it. Some people complain about a little bit, but in this case, these guys are brothers, and you're able to, since you're in a drift, you're able to step on the other person's memories. There's not going to be a lot of secrets, because you're basically in each other's mind. You're able to visualize things. So I'm going to play this little clip about, the drift, and I can't quite fully explain it, but just know that you become one mind when you're piloting the Jaeger. And also, it's kind of neat to watch them get ready to take Gypsy Danger out. There's a lot of equipment that they have to put on a suit. There's a lot of visual effects here, and I'm not sure if they all make sense or not, but that's not the point. The point is, it's just like if you were watching like a giant robot kind of anime type deal, you realize that you just can't just jump in. There's a lot of preparation. You put on this suit. They have these electronic spines they slap into the back of the suit that clink down and lock everything in place. They have these helmets that they put on that have, which this to me, this doesn't make a lot of sense, but the face shield's like all yellow, and it says something about the gel in the face shield. So the face shield slowly slides down. It's supposed to be gel that comes in and fills the suit or whatever to make everything, make you be one with, the robot. But what I like was all the robotic controls inside the Jaegers. There's a great big foot pad you put your feet in. So like you run and, you run in place, and that makes, the giant robot go. You have these arms you grab inside that you can do things with, and that makes the robot do those things. And they did a very good job of like putting this together in a way that is kind of realistic when you think about in terms of like how we would do things today, as opposed to like they could have very easily just said, okay, this is all controlled with your mind, and you just sit here and you think it and it happens. But it's not that at all. There was a lot of physical activity taking place. You have to do the things in order to make the robot do the things, but it's not exactly one-on-one. You guys are both controlling, this takes two pilots, but it's not like you're just using your one arm, your one leg. You're using both your legs to make, things work. So it's a little different than what you would, you know, what you would perceive if it was like an animated film. They try to gloss over this, but that's part of what makes this film so cool is the fact that you get to see inside the cockpit and you get to see how these things work, and you get this nice sense of dimension of like how freaking huge this robot is. Like if you look at some of the movie posters for this, there is a platform right by Gypsy Dangerous Head, and there's two characters on the platform, and they are very minuscule compared to how freaking big this robot is. You know, and they get in the head, and then the head attaches to the body, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, I'm going to play my clip now.
13, 12, 11, 10.
Ready to step into my head, 9, kid?
Please, 8, after you.
7,
age before beauty, 6, old man.
5, 4.
Neural handshake.
2.
Initiated.
The Drift. Jaeger Tech. Based on DARPA jet fighter neural systems. Two pilots mind melding through memories with the body of a giant machine. The deeper the bond, the better you fight.
Neural handshake strong and holding.
Right hemisphere is calibrating.
Left hemisphere, calibrating.
Now, the person in charge of the Jaeger program, the guy that we see who seems to be the main man, is played by Idris Elba, who is, he just does a fantastic job in any role he takes, as far as I'm concerned. And the name of his character is Stacker Pentecost, which I really love. This movie is like any character he's ever played who's been kind of in charge and command respect. This is like a boiled down version of that. We don't have this all this character development for this guy. He is the guy in charge. He doesn't put up with a lot of crap. He's going to do things his way. There's not any backstory. We get a little bit of, like, a smallest amount of backstory, but it doesn't even really pertain much to him. It's to another character altogether. But it's like every kind of trope in a leader type character, like all boiled into one, which might seem like a bad thing, but in this case, it is not. This is the perfect character for this film. Now, he is in charge of the Jaeger program, and what we're finding is that the kaiju are getting more and more powerful as they come through, and they're adapting much quicker to the Jaegers and their abilities. Now, I have to mention that, you know, the one of the cool things about this film, like so many cool – I mean, I love this movie. I just love it. It's great. The Jaegers have personalities all themselves. Each Jaeger is different. They have different abilities. You know, the world came together to build these, so they're not exactly cheap. There's a Jaeger that has three arms, that has three people that run it. There is just, they all have their different, not only do they look different, but they each have like a different superpower, you know, is the best way to describe it, you know. And it is, and you know, obviously you have different people that are controlling the Jaegers, and you know, they have different personalities on, and it kind of matches up with the Jaeger, which I really like. But anyway, a lot of red tape, a lot of bureaucracy. So what we're finding out is that the you know, all the generals and politicians are not happy with the results the Jaeger program is getting as the kaiju get more and more powerful.
The kaiju are learning our defenses. They're adapting, evolving, and we're losing Jaegers faster than we can build them. Lima, Seattle, Vladivostok. Category 4 kaijus are now coming through the breach. I think even you can see, Marshall, this is no longer a sound strategy. The frequency of the attacks has increased. The Jaegers are not the most viable line of defense anymore.
I am aware. Those are my Rangers that die every time a Jaeger falls, which is why I'm asking you for one...
Excuse me, Marshal.
Last chance.
Excuse
one
me.
Final assault with everything
Listen
we've
to
got.
Me. The Jaeger program is dead, Marshal. On the other hand, the Coastal Wall program is a promising option.
The world appreciates all that you and your men have done, but it's over. We will authorize you to take all remaining Jaegers to the last battle station, Hong Kong. We are prepared to fund you for the next 8 months while the coastal wall is completed. After that, you will receive no further support.
You have your answer, Marshal.
So that's it? It's over?
Suits and ties, flashy smiles. It's all they are, Sacker. We don't need him.
And as with any good person in charge, he doesn't need anybody else to help him out. He's got his own ideas. Of course, it doesn't really explain where he's getting... Well, I guess we get some a little information where he's getting his funding, but he's in this giant facility, and it's like nobody cares that he's just kind of doing his own thing, you know, hanging out, doing his own Jaeger program. And I can understand that, you know, they might do some explanation of where the funding's coming from. But after the Jaegers pop up a couple times fighting the kaiju, and the whole game plan from the rest of the world is to build a big wall around things, nobody like questions him and says, hey, you know, who are you to just like have a gigantic robot that can just do whatever it wants without any control? So that's just something we kind of gloss over, because this is the hero's tale. You know, what these are the good guys against the bad guys. And we don't get too much caught up in too much bureaucracy or red tape here. The idea here, I think, is that it is a program run on a shoestring budget, and the people that are doing it aren't, you know, obviously not being paid or things like that. They are just they're doing it because it's the right thing to do. Now, I mentioned that when Raleigh and his brother were in the Jaeger, Raleigh has not returned to the program. He has kind of drifted around, and he's currently working on building the wall, because people need to eat, and in order to do that they have to work. So he's working on building the wall, and in the meantime they're trying to find Jaeger pilots, and obviously he was one. He's a seasoned pilot, but he doesn't want to his brother died. It was very traumatic. So Pentecost tracks him down.
Took me a while to find you. Anchorage, Sheldon Point,
known. Yeah, man of my position travels with the wall, chasing shifts to make a living. What do you want?
Spent the last 6 months activating everything I can get my hands on. There's an old Jaeger. Mark III. You may know it. It needs a pilot.
I'm guessing that wasn't your first choice.
You are my first choice. All the other Mark III pilots are dead.
Look, I can't have anyone else in my head again. I'm done. I was still connected to my brother when he died. I can't go through that again, man. I'm sorry.
Haven't you heard, Mr. Beckett? The world is coming to an end. So where would you rather die? Here or in a Jaeger?
I mean, just for the record, I would rather die in a Jaeger, because, man, those things are freaking cool, man. Anyway, so obviously, you know, the first part of the film is getting our heroes all together and finding, and then we get, you know, our middle act is getting all the information, and then our final act is, of course, the battles. I have to say something about the battles, because... can't really do sound clips of battles. You don't get the epic scope of what's happening. The battles in this film are fantastic. They are not, it's not like boring, you know, I mean, like, you know, I'm a huge fan of like Godzilla movies and stuff like that. I mean, I enjoy watching all those, but you know, for me, a lot of times going back and rewatching some of the older Godzilla films, especially the ones that I loved as a kid, the battles are just boring. It's like, you know, you have the two creatures and they're just banging on each other in the middle of nowhere and nothing's happening. The big thing about this movie, if you're looking at it as just kind of a kaiju film, is the battles are epic. So many freaking cool things. And it's not just like, we're out in the ocean, or, you know, we're on a city street having a battle. It's we're going at it. We each have our own superpowers. You know, the kaiju have their abilities. The Jaegers have their abilities. Everything is very visual. We're not just standing around pounding on one another. You know, we're picking up buses and trains and whatever else and using those as weapons. The battles are just fantastic. They did a fantastic job with the CGI in this. It is to me, and I bought this the day it came out on Blu-ray, and I've watched it multiple times. I think it's just so well done that you can't tell that any of it's, you know, CGI. Sometimes the CGI takes you out of it. In this film, I did not feel that at all. It's just, they are just so cool, and everything is spliced together so perfectly between the actors and the kaiju and, you know, the Jaegers and what they're doing and visualizing all that for, you know, putting all that up there, you know, for us to be able to understand, like, what this action's doing, what that action's doing, and the sense of of urgency of things that are like as the Jaeger takes damage, it's not just like, you know, it's whatever. You understand kind of like what's happening to the pilots inside as, you know, the Jaeger takes damage. And man, they did a fantastic job with that. Now we're going to be introduced to the two scientists here. And these guys, this was one of those ones where, you know, you have Charlie Day and, I wasn't sure how well he pulled this off because up until now, the only thing I'd seen him in is It's Always Sunny, and he just plays a blithering idiot on there. Don't get me wrong, I like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. But for this character, or this particular person, I wasn't sure he'd be able to pull this off. But man, and especially going back and watching it a second and third time, I think that he does a very good job playing his character. Do I think somebody else could have done it? Yeah. But I know we wanted that kind of like comedic element. Part of that is the two scientists we have are like kind of polar opposites. But they definitely give you the feeling that, man, this place is really running on a shoestring budget. We can't even get the best of the best. I mean, these guys are smart, but their personality quirks are so far out there. So you have them, you have him, and then you have Bern Gorman, who it was in Torchwood, is what I know him from. I'm sure he's been other things, but that's what I know him from. These are the two scientists that are very much the odd couple, and you know, they're not only are they an odd couple in the way that their personalities, but also in what they think is happening. You have one on one end of the spectrum and one on the other end of the spectrum, and what Charlie Day's character wants to do is he wants to drift with a kaiju brain and somehow connect and hopefully see what their game plan is.
-2 REQ.
In the beginning, the kaiju attacks with space flash 24 weeks, then 12, then 6, then every 2 weeks. The last one in Sydney was a week. In 4 days, we could be seeing a kaiju every 8 hours until they are coming every 4 minutes. Marshal, we should witness a double event within 7 days.
Mr. Gottlieb, I am to drop a 2,400-pound thermonuclear bomb. I need more than a prediction.
Well, that's a problem then, because see, he actually can't give you anything more than a prediction.
No kaiju entrails over my side of the room. You know the rules. Every bloody day is incessant.
Yes. On point.
Numbers do not lie. Politics and poetry, promises, these are lies. Numbers are as close as we get to the handwriting of God. What? Would you give me a moment? There will be a double event. And then shortly thereafter, 3. And then 4.
And then we're dead. I get it.
Alas. This is where the good news comes. Here is our universe. And here is theirs. And this is what we call the throat, the passage between the breach and us. We know that it's atomic in nature. I predict that the increased traffic will force the breach to stabilize and remain open long enough to get the device through and collapse its structure.
Yeah, and that's where I gotta chime in, because really, I mean, I wouldn't want to go in there with that limited amount of information.
Newton,
that's
don't
what I was
embarrass
trying to
yourself.
Say. Just hear me out for a second. Give me a second, please. Why do we judge the kaiju on a category system? It's because each one is completely different from the next, right? You see what I'm saying? Like, one looks like a shark and one looks like a fish.
Just get to the point.
Yes.
The point is, I don't think they're all completely different after all. All right. These are some samples I collected, all right? Now, this one here was harvested in Sydney. And this was harvested in Manila 6 years ago. They have the same exact DNA. They're clones.
And this is the point where he goes completely crazy.
There's so much more to the kaiju than we understand. And we've really only scratched the surface. This is a piece of a kaiju's brain. Now, unfortunately, it's damaged. It's a little bit weak, but it's still alive. Now, I think I can tap into it using the same technology that allows the two Jaeger pilots to share a neural bridge. Now, think about that. I could tell you exactly how to get through the breach yourselves.
You're suggesting that we initiate a drift with a kaiju?
No. Not like a whole kaiju, you know, just a tiny piece of its brain.
The neural surge would be too much for the human brain.
I agree.
I don't agree.
Gottlieb, I'd like your data on my desk ASAP.
So? No, but his is so...
Thank you, Newt.
Guys, I mean, this is the most amazing thing in the...
I know that you're desperate to be right, so you've not wasted your life being a kaiju groupie, but it's not going to work.
It is going to work, Herman, and I'll tell you something else. Fortune favors the brave, dude.
You heard them. They won't give you the equipment, and even if they did, you'd kill yourself!
Or I'd be a rock star.
And that's kind of what it's all about. You know, he's trying to, obviously solve the problem and figure out what the next step is. But as we reveal a little bit more about Charlie Day's character and just little things here and there, I never really gave it a whole lot of thought until I started pulling the audio clips for this. He has like kaiju tattoos on him, and he gets accused by the other scientists of being a kaiju fanboy and yada, yada, yada. But really, I think what it is that, you know, he can't pilot a Jaeger, but he has all this intelligence, and he's, you know, obviously a part of this. Part of this program, part of, you know, figuring out the mystery, stopping the danger. And, you know, he's just as important as a Jaeger pilot, but he's not getting any of the frills of being able to do that. So that's part of what this is. He does a really good job. I really enjoy what, in the beginning, the first time I saw his movie theater, I was like, oh, God. But then I really, really liked what he did. I thought that he gave the character life and made it, you know, a lot of his ability to give this character a life of its own and kind of develop it for the little bit of screen time he has wouldn't really work without the other scientist and showing their personalities clashing repeatedly. The next character we're going to meet is Mako, who's basically the person who's been showing Charlie Day around Raleigh. Raleigh. Showing Raleigh around, helping to restore the Jaegers because obviously they have to get the old Jaegers and restore them because, well, building a Jaeger apparently costs a bunch of money and you need all kind of equipment they don't really have. And she knows a lot about the facility they're in and just teaching people stuff. But she's not, she's pretty brutal when I'm just going to play the clip, but she's brutal.
So what's your story? Restoring old Jaegers, showing has-beens like me around? That can't be it. You a pilot?
No, not yet. But I wanna be one more than anything.
What'd your simulator score?
51 drops, 51 kills.
Oh, that's amazing. But you're not one of the candidates tomorrow?
I am not. The Marshal has his reasons.
Yeah, he always does, doesn't he? But with 51 kills, I can't imagine what they could be.
I hope you approve all my choices. I've studied your fighting techniques and strategy, even Alaska.
What do you think?
I think you're unpredictable. You have a habit of deviating from standard combat techniques. You take risks to endanger yourself and your crew. I don't think you're the right man for this mission.
Well. Thank you for your honesty. You might be right. But one day when you're a pilot, you're gonna see that in combat, you make decisions. You have to live with the consequences. That's what I'm trying to do.
So that was our very melodramatic moment, you know. And it's very clear that... that Raleigh and Mako are connecting. The next big deal coming up is that And this is the one people always like mock, but there's got to be a way. You have to visualize this. There has to be a way to show how you match people up. You could have a boring old people putting on brain caps and seeing, you know, like seeing how they work together. But the way that you see if you can match somebody to be in the drift with them in order to pilot a Jaeger is they do this stick fighting. And the idea, and they try to explain it a little bit. I don't know if the explanation really works or not. I just kind of went with it. It was fun. I liked it. They know what they're doing. I don't overthink it. And when you start trying to analyze every little thing, well, first of all, obviously, if you're going to analyze everything, you're probably not having very much fun with this film. And it was just too much fun for me to worry about. But, you know, I'm not exactly sure how the stick fighting is supposed to match them up. I think that the idea here is that they're fighting and you're supposed to anticipate your opponent's next move. You don't have to hurt them. You just have to anticipate their move and see if they can, you know, I guess the idea is that if you can do that, then when you're in the Jaeger and everything's going to hell and you have to do quick thinking or whatever, that you're more in sync than with somebody you wouldn't. And so what happens here is he's going through opponent after opponent, and Mako is just like keeps making faces, and Raleigh gets a little irritated, and he's like, you know, you keep making this face, what's going on? She's like, well, you could have taken him quicker. And so he finally calls her out, and you find out that Pentecost does not want her to pilot because this Mako is like his daughter. You know, he rescued her when she was real young, and he's raised her, and he doesn't want to put her in danger. But, you know, obviously we go through the whole thing where, you know, they have a battle of wills, and then you know, the shit hits the fan. They don't really have an option other than to have these two pilot the Jaeger. Well, we're getting to the point where they're going to, you know, they finally gets the okay, and they're getting, this is a big deal. You know, you have this big buildup. They're getting into Jaeger. They're going to see if they're going to go into drift together, if they're going to be able to function. It's all a test thing. Well, why this is happening, Charlie Day's character is like, you know, now's a good time for me to try to drift with a kaiju. And man, what I loved about this scene was that he just looks like hell. I mean, he's like all beat up. He's got blood coming out of one nostril and everything. And as bad as he looks, it's because he's Charlie Day. You just look at him and you laugh. And but I do love the acting here because he's shaking everywhere. He can't. It's a freaking alien monster brain he tried to connect with. Anyway, so they're getting ready to do all this, and then the other guy comes in and. The other scientist and tells him what's going on, and then we get a long explanation. Here's the clip for that.
I need to talk to you.
Not now, Mr. Gottlieb. So you can appreciate how important this moment is to me.
Newton created a neural bridge from garbage and drifted with a kaiju. I found him prone, and he's sort of dazed. I don't exactly know what to do.
Told you it would work.
Yes, you did. Well, what'd you see?
You know, it was only a fragment of a brain, so really all I was able to get was like a series of images or impressions, you know, like when you blink your eyes over and over and over again, all you really see are like frames. It was emotional.
Newton. Okay, Newton.
Hey, so.
Newton, look at me. Now I want you to take your time and be very specific.
Okay. Well, I don't feel like they're just following some sort of animalistic urge, you know, just hunting and gathering. I think they're attacking us under orders.
That's impossible.
Is that impossible?
It's impossible.
Because...
You know what? Why do you care for the kaiju?
You! Shut up!
Yes, sir.
You! Keep talking.
These beings, these masters, they're colonists. They overtake worlds. They just consume them, and then they move on to the next. And they've been here before in sort of a trial run. It was the dinosaurs. But the atmosphere wasn't conducive, right? So they waited it out. And they waited it out. And now, you know, with ozone depletion and carbon monoxide polluted waters, well, we practically terraformed it for them. Because now they're coming back. It's perfect. See, the first wave, that was just the hounds. Categories 1 through 4, it was nothing. Their sole purpose was to aim for the populated areas and take out the vermin. Us, the second wave, that is the exterminators. And they will finish the job. And then... the new tenants will take possession. See, the reason that I found the identical DNA in the two separate kaiju organs is because they are grown.
Newton, I need you to do it again. need more information.
I can't do it again. I mean, not unless you have a fresh kaiju brain lying around. Do you?
Now, here is where Ron Perlman's character is introduced and he gets in on the action. The idea here is that every time they destroy a kaiju or they kill a kaiju, that they've basically sold all the rights, all the anything. They just sell the entire thing to Ron Perlman and his company. I mean, I use the term company loosely. And they do that because that way they get, you know, Pentecost gets money to keep everything flowing. So the idea is that he needs to go and get a fresh brain or whatever. And we get to meet Ron Perlman and like see all the different weird things. Like there's like parasites on the kaiju and all this stuff. And Charlie Day's like a kid in a candy store seeing all this stuff. But anyway, although that's all fun, not really pertinent to our main story here, which is giant robots. Okay. That's the main story. Giant robots. So we have a couple of moments with Pen. And like I said, you know, Pentecost, Idris Elba is a fantastic actor. I mean, seriously, like everything that he does, like I always thought that he should have been Lex Luthor in a Batman Superman movie. You know, when they were doing that, I felt that he would be the perfect Lex Luthor because he can be menacing just by the way he uses his voice. But the thing is about Lex Luthor is that he's somebody who should be respected, not just be like, oh, there's this goofy guy. You know, he's a scary individual because he's so smart. And I think that Idris Elba would – I just think that he could pull that off without an issue at all. I think it would be amazing. Anyway, so – you know, we have a couple moments. We finally get Mako and Raleigh are going to use Gypsy Danger, which great name for a giant robot. Gypsy Danger, come on, man. Anyway, also if you look up any posters, there's a lot of really retro posters that are really super cool. I'd love to have some bigger prints of this. I love everything about this movie. I actually have years ago, as soon as it was available in previews, which is a comics preview catalog. They also have toys and clothes and stuff. They had a sweatshirt on there, and I got it for a freaking deal. It's got Pacific Rim logos on the front and back, it's one of my prized possessions. I love that sweatshirt. I love this freaking movie. It's just awesome. And also the soundtrack. Oh my God, we haven't even gotten started on the soundtrack. Anyway. Okay. So back to this. So we have this moment where, he's trying to explain to Pentecost that he's not helping. You know, Raleigh's saying, but you're holding her back. You're not helping. And at one point in time, he grabs him, and then we have this really cheesy scene. But again, it kind of sets a tone where Pentecost is like, one, never touch me. Two, never touch me. You know, and he's just a complete dick to Raleigh. And so you're just like, okay, whatever. During the course of one of the many scenes, we see his nose bleeding, and then we find out that he has something wrong with him, and we have this next clip to explain that.
How sick are you? Why didn't you tell me?
What's to tell? You know them Mach 1s? We scraped them bad boys together in 14 months. Last thing we were thinking about was radiation shielding. I ran nearly a dozen missions. I stayed under the medical radar for a while, but the last time I jockeyed was Tokyo. I finished the fight solo, but for 3 hours. I burned. They warned me if I ever stepped foot into a Jaeger again, the toll would be too much. You and I are the only two that ever ran solo combat. That's why I brought you here.
So they have a game plan now, you know, and you already know how this is going to play out, right? I mean, as soon as you realize that he's sick, which you realize a half an hour ago because he has the bloody nose and you realize, you know, that he's going to make a sacrifice. That's just how this thing works. And again, knowing all this doesn't make this a bad movie. Some people are like, oh, you could just see the stuff that was going to happen. So what? So what? You're here for the journey, man. I don't care about the stuff that's going to happen. I want to see how it all plays out. That's what makes it. I mean, once you see a movie, you know how it ends, but doesn't affect your enjoyment of Star Wars for the 37th time, right? Or whatever film you like to watch multiple times. And if you don't like to watch films multiple times, I'm not even sure why you listen to this podcast, because that's kind of what this is all about, man. Just kind of about, you know, just being happy with our geekdom and you know, loving things to death and just, you know, rehashing them because why not? Right? Right. It's better than talking politics. That's the way I look at it. Okay, so You know that there's going to be a sacrifice. So the game plan is kind of this. You know, the idea is that you're going to have the Jaegers go in. They're going to go in the ocean. They're going to go by the rift. The idea is to take an atomic bomb through the rift and blow it up, and then completely seal the rift. And you know, I guess the idea is here is that. They don't give us a lot of information on how the rift opened, okay, or if it was something we did or something they did or whatever. But the idea is here that you seal the rift, then obviously if you close the door, nothing else can come through. So you have some great – you have some badass battle scenes. And like I said, the fight scenes on this, man, you couldn't ask for more. One of the best scenes, and I mean I was giggling like a schoolgirl in the theater when I saw this. As he's fighting a kaiju, the thing suddenly has wings. You're like, what the heck is going on? It grabs hold of Gypsy Danger, takes Gypsy Danger up into the stratosphere. And all the systems are failing. They are in trouble. And you have, I mean, and again, this is all melodramatic stuff you see coming, but I do not care because I love it and I loved it to death. And if you didn't love it and you think it's a dumb movie, well, then fight me. That's what I got to say to you. Anyway, he's like, you know, Raleigh's like, ah, man, you know, we're done. We got nothing left. And she's like, we have one more thing. And she pushes a button and it says sword. And when it said sword, I just started giggling out loud in the theater. And at that point in time, I was like, best movie ever. And she pushes a button, and this chain comes out of its hand, and it hardens into a sword, and they stab the heck out of this kaiju, and it was just freaking badass. I don't care who you are, it was badass. I love this movie, and I make no apologies for it. And anyway, and also what's coming up, I love too. So the idea, you get the idea, right? So we're going to go, we're going to blow the hole in the rift, and Pentecost has to have a co-pilot, and the other pilot that's here with him, the other team is a father-son team. The son's pretty much a douchebag. He just kind of acts like an ass this whole time, and the father is not unable to go, so Pentecost and this guy's son are going to go, and they are taking a nuke. That's what they're doing. That's their job. They know this is a final mission. This is whatever. That's what's going to happen, you know. So, but, you know, they're suiting up. It's time to suit up. You know, they have a clock that they set every time a kaiju attack happens. They reset the clock and they count it down. And that's a big part of the staging area and everything. And there's just, you know, you just have all these visual things that they've been kind of building up to. So then you have one of the greatest speeches. You know, everybody's like, the speech on Independence Day was a great speech. And it was a great speech. Whether you like the movie or not, the speech is great. It's great. But you know what? This speech, also great. Also love it. And I've played it before in the podcast back in the day when I was playing. I did an episode of like great speeches to get you fired up. This was on there. It's going to be on this one too because, well, just can't get enough of it.
Everyone, listen up. Today, at the edge of our hope, at the end of our time, we have chosen not only to believe in ourselves, but in each other. Today, there's not a man nor woman in here that shall stand alone. Not today. Today, we face the monsters that are at our door and bring the fight to them. Today, we are canceling the apocalypse.
And why wouldn't you cheer? why wouldn't you cheer? Because that's brilliant. It's short and brilliant, and they're canceling the apocalypse. That's right. Deal with it. Okay, I love it. I love the clip. I love this movie. I make no apologies for it. So if you haven't seen this film, if you haven't seen it, I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't see it, because, I mean, I don't get it. Anyway, it's you can find it on Blu-ray for like $8 now, $8 or $9. You can all usually find it on sale somewhere. If Amazon doesn't have it, somebody has it, and it's worth owning. It's just worth owning. Now, we have, before I talk about the sequel, which is going to be very brief, the soundtrack, man. I can tell you this is one of those films, and there's a handful of them. There's probably maybe 10 films that I can think of in my life that the moment I left the theater, I bought the soundtrack. And it's weird because, you know, as time goes on and formats change, right? Like, I distinctly remember when I saw the Thomas Jane Punisher film, also great movie. I know that John Travolta was a horrible bad guy, but Thomas Jane, the best Punisher. If you don't think so, well, then obviously you're high. But I distinctly remember leaving the theater and walking directly to the record store, and I still call them record stores, but they sold CDs, and buying the CD as soon as I got done with the film. And I could not wait to listen to it all. And I still have that CD around here somewhere. And then, like, I remember, like, this film, I left and I bought it digitally because that was the format. But, man, love this soundtrack. It's really well put together. And surprisingly enough, there's actually several tracks on here that are great tracks to run to. That I put on my running playlist and you know, just kind of mix them in there. I just really enjoyed it for a soundtrack that doesn't really have any words. You know, it's all just, you know, it's actually the score. Really well done. Really enjoyed it. There's not much about this movie I don't like. I mean, I love the movie. I love the music. I love the posters. I love the images. I love all the Jaegers. I wish that I had all the toys. I don't know what I would do with them, but I don't have a Gypsy Danger. I don't have any of the toys, but if I ever found a really decent Gypsy Danger, I haven't found one that I love yet, but if I ever find one that I like, I would definitely purchase it, because the movie is, to me, is, you know, it is one of those things that takes all these different elements that I like and kind of put it together. I mean, you have, like, you know, you obviously have imagery from Godzilla movies. You have imagery from giant robot anime movies. You have fun kung fu imagery from the fight scenes. You have all the tropes of great leaders. You have the whole, like, you know, I'm leading you people and I'm dying, so I might as well sacrifice myself. You have all these great things come together in this movie, and it all works. I know some people complain about it, and I've read a couple of reviews that I felt, I mean, I'm not talking about, I mean, obviously I felt, read some critical reviews because, well, people are critical, they're critics, and they don't get it. But I've, like, read reviews from people that I thought would love this movie, or I've talked to them, and they were just like, that was okay. You know, me, I love it. I make no apologies about it. And, you know, that's that. Now, the next movie, and again, like I said, it's going to be called Pacific Rim Uprising. They're saying 2018. I hope it's going to happen. You know, it is, I thought it was going to be directed by Del Toro. But I guess not. It's going to be directed by Stephen S. D. Knight. So I hope that it works. There seems to be photos up here, and I'm not exactly sure what's going on. So I'm hoping it's a done deal. And I know that just kind of ignoring this and it's probably not the best way, but every time they bring this up, there's been like 5 separate occasions they said it was a go and then it wasn't. And I know that we have actors attached, and I read stuff and I just kind of move along. I'm afraid if I look at it too hard, they'll change their mind, that they'll film it and see, like, you know what, we're not going to put this out because Aaron wants it too bad. That's what I think is going to happen. So I'm just going to kind of avoid it. Although from what it says here, we have John Boyega, who's going to play Jake Pentecost, which that means that we will be seeing, I guess, his son, taking the title role here. So I'm excited for it. I think it's some good stuff. Anyway, so that's Pacific Rim. I hope that people out there enjoy this movie as much as I do. I don't think that there's anybody that can enjoy this movie as much as I do because I love this movie. I don't know if I made that my point there, but this movie is brilliant. What's going on this week? There's been so much good TV lately, so many good other things happening. We have Iron Fist coming out. Well, not coming out. Iron Fist is out. And, you know, it's funny. You get kind of I get really exasperated with people that haven't even seen the product and are already negative reviewing it. From what I've seen with Iron Fist, I mean, do I think this is going to be a brilliant Marvel series? No, I think it's going to be a Marvel Netflix series, which means it's going to be we're not going to have superhero costumes for the most part or whatever. We're just going to have guys doing stuff and they have super abilities. I mean, do I want an Iron Fist where the first time we see him, he has the great big chest tattoo and wearing the mask? Yeah, I'd love to see that. Is everybody else in the world going to like that? Probably not. What kills me about the Iron Fist thing is that we've known this is going to be part of the Netflix series for quite some time of the series of Marvel things. They announced it when they announced, after Daredevil, they announced what they were going to bring out and in pretty much what order that was going to happen. And then these people started talking about whitewashing of the character. Okay. I don't think that they understand what the whole whitewashing, a great term, what that really means, because when the character's already white and blonde, you really can't wash him any whiter than that. Okay, when he's the source material, they're taking this from the source material, and you're actually complaining that they won't change him to an Asian guy. Well, first of all, that's stupid, because if you took the time to actually read the source material before you ran off at the mouth about it, you'd understand that part of the thing here is the fact that he is a white guy, and he is in this, he's out of his element. It's a fish out of water in a lot of different ways. And you would also understand that once you read Power Man and Iron Fist, the idea of these guys from two separate sides, of life were able to become buddies. And we get to see a little bit of each of them as time goes on in the stories. So if you wanted to make him an Asian guy or you wanted to make him a black guy, it's not really going to work. And also, well, that was the whole point with that he was a white guy. And, they were looking at this from that point of view. And it just annoys me to no end, all this. People just are not happy unless they're complaining about something that they don't really know anything about or they don't really get the character. And it's just can we just tell good stories? In this case, I don't think it works if it's an Asian guy. Okay, it's as simple as that. There's certain characters you can change their gender, you can change their ethnic background, and it doesn't matter. But that's just like saying, well, too bad the Black Panther couldn't be a white guy, because that would make no sense. Okay, the whole idea here is that he's a white, pretty much the whitest white guy. We're dealing with that. But I haven't seen all of the Netflix series. I've only seen the first episode. I'm not sure how they're going to handle that material, but that was one of the interesting things to me. I mean, when I was younger and I read it, that was one of the things that Power Man and Iron Fist that really hit me. I read some of the Iron Fist stuff by itself, but the Power Man and Iron Fist stuff was the stuff that I loved. I loved that. And it was different. And, of course, when I read that when I was younger, it just always used to tick me off that like Power Man was he just had these super abilities. I mean, bulletproof skin, he was unstoppable. It always seemed to me that he was just as strong as I know it's not true now, but I always felt that he was like just as strong as like the Hulk or somebody like that, because he was just such a badass. And he was just, they showed him, he was just tough, like not like tough like he could fight, but just like tough, like you could hit him with a bus and it wouldn't phase him tough. And I used to always get irritated. I'm like, why is there not more of this guy? Because he was so cool. I thought that was so cool. One of my favorite stories was, and the cover is iconic, and I had the issue where he's holding Danny and Danny's been pretty much beat half to death, And I believe if you look at the Essential comics, I think it's the first or second Essential of Power Man Iron Fist that has that iconic cover where Luke Cage is holding Danny, and in the comic issue it says he's going to put him down, and he's like, when he puts him down there's going to be trouble or something along those lines. But I always love that cover, and I love that story. That was just the cover was much more dramatic than the story itself, but it was during that particular issue that you learn just how tough, you know, it's just a reminder of how tough, I can't say you learn, but it's a reminder of how tough Luke Cage's Power Man is. He's just like, I mean, I think you could drop a satellite on him, and he's just like so, you know. And I know we put limits on our heroes now to give them limitations and things like that, but he was just always one of those guys that was just, you know, at least when I read him. Now, I didn't read the really early stuff, which I'm going back and doing now. That's the one thing I can say, that every time Marvel brings out, any of the companies bring out a series or a movie, it's always great, because if you go to Comixology or even Amazon Kindle, you can get the digital versions for dirt cheap. When Power Man came out, I got like the Power Man Omnibus, or the Epic Collection was like $4. You know, and I'm like, holy cow, it's like $4. I couldn't pass it up. And at the same time, this time I bought up a bunch of the Iron Fist stuff while it was available in the Epic Collections for dirt cheap. So it's a really good time to pick these things up. But there's just so many good things going on in the Geek TV and in films as well. A lot of really good films out right now that I think are that look pretty cool. And so much more coming as we enter this summer movie season. So many things I want to see and just not enough time. I still haven't seen Logan. At this point, I sincerely doubt I'm going to make it to the theater in time to see that. And I want to see Ghost in the Shell. And it's just, oh my God, there's just so many different things out there. So many things to get excited about. So hopefully you get an opportunity to do that. And so many good comics. And I'm still reading a lot of the DC stuff. And I'm loving it all. It's just all so good. Anyway, that's it for me. Pacific Rim, I hope you enjoyed it. I'm still having scheduling conflicts as far as trying to line people up to record shows with, and it's still something I want to do. But at the same point in time, I've touched base with a few people. I know what movies they want to do, so I'm not going to solo those, but I am going to keep plugging along and trying to continue the solo podcast until I get the opportunity to record shows with people. Still something I very much enjoy doing. And if anybody, you know, again, if anybody else is interested who hasn't already spoken up, feel free to shoot me an email. You can do that at scifidig@gmail.com. If you go to scifidig.com, you can follow or you can find different ways to contact me. I dig email, Facebook Messenger works. Instagram, I'm Sci-Fi Dog on Instagram, and there's a Facebook group, and also a Google group, that an email group that is good for doing a, like, in kind of, I hate the term email blast. I hate that term, but you can become part of the group, and you can either read the threads on there, or you can subscribe to the email like I do, in which case I can email people and do whatever. So that's it. If there's any questions, feedback, I love feedback. So if somebody wants to send me some, not going to hurt my feelings. I will talk to everybody next time. Over and out.